Hello, everybody. We have an energy deindustrialization going on in Germany, but is it coming to the United States very quickly? But yet, let's also take a look. Why is it that the energy consumers, the energy that consumers are paying since 2005 to now has gone up? And in California, it has doubled. But yet we've had 15% increase of wind and solar from that same time period. Is it related? Or in Arkansas, are they related and married to each other? I'm not real sure, but I've got two fantastic guys that are stopping by the podcast today. Let me give an introduction to the Energy Bad Boys. I mean, they're on Substack and you've got to follow them and support them. I have Mitch Rowling, and I mean, he is on here and he's been dominating the conversation as we just started it. Mitch, thank you for stopping by today.
Thank you so much for having us.
Boy, that's the most you've said in our entire conversation. All right. And then also his buddy and his partner, Isaac Orr. Isaac, thank you for stopping by today.
Yeah, happy to be here.
I can't wait to begin to find out, because you guys are rock stars. You've got a balance in your how you've got your plan working, and you're good buddies with Robert Bryce. I love Robert. He's been on the podcast three times, and you guys have got a great Substack. Tell us how you got started.
Well, Mitch and I have been working at Center of the American Experiment, which is a policy think tank in Minnesota, for the last several years. So that's where we have been doing the yeoman's share of our work in energy. And it was like, what, 5 months ago, Mitch Doomberg quoted us in one of his articles. I think it was debunking the levelized cost of energy. And after that, it was like, okay, this is the sign we've been waiting for, because Mitch and I had been kind of kicking the tires on Substack for a while. I remember in May, we're like, okay, what's the name of our Substack going to be? And we're like, okay, Energy Bad Boys, that's cool. And they were like, what's our logo going to be? So we thought about it for a while, and we're like, we definitely want it to be a fork inside of an electrical socket. So after Doomberg retweeted us, we put up this article that we had written for Center of the American Experiment's quarterly magazine, Thinking Minnesota, called Enjoy the Blackouts, Jack. And, you know, that was very well received. It really helped that Doomberg restacked us on the platform and has been very supportive of our efforts so far. So it's been a really fun ride. We've been going since, I think it was November 12th. We posted that. And as of today, we've almost got 2,600 subscribers. So it's been a fun ride, and we're looking forward to keeping it going.
Mm-hmm. Oh, fantastic. And so, Mitch, what have you got going on that? So you're the data dude.
Yep. We both write, but I do more of the, you know, digging for the bodies, uncovering stuff and data filings and whatnot. What most people would consider the boring work, but I seem to have fun with it. I would do it on my free time. So lucky I get paid for it. You know, I like to uncover what they're not telling on the front page of a lot of these filings. So, you know, I really enjoy it.
Okay. I'm telling you, this is kind of fun, because I just interviewed Doomberg with Chris Wright, CEO of Liberty Energy. I love Chris Wright. Absolutely a great human. And then Doomberg, this is my third interview. It's probably my third with Chris as well, too. And then my third interview with Doomberg. And I love Doomberg. And it's so cool that he's got the reach. He's like the number one in energy and finance out there. And you guys are really growing as well. So humor wins, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. That, and you know, one of the things that I always try to do when I'm writing an article is I just stick with the mantra, don't make me think. Right. So the thing that I want to write an article in such
don't
a way.
Make me think.
Yes. So I want to write an article in a way where the reader just intuitively understands what we are trying to convey. I do not want, every time a reader has to sit and say, well, I don't know if I quite understand what that means. That's a friction point. And that is probably a point where they're going to lose interest in the article, or they can get frustrated. So What we specialize in is boiling down very complicated concepts and hopefully explain it in a way that people just kind of get it, right? We use analogies that kind of just, it just clicks. And ultimately, energy is a very opaque and it can be very complicated subject matter. So what we want to do is we want to bring this to the masses, which is why, you know, we're really proud of the articles that we've just written on the website, the Green Plating the Grid article and the deindustrialization article. So, you know, this doesn't have to be opaque and complicated, but a lot of the stakeholders that are in this industry, whether it's the utilities or the lawmakers, the public utility commissioners or the environmental groups, they want to make this seem so overwhelming that normal people cannot participate. They're basically trying to gatekeep the conversation. And we're saying, no, that doesn't have to be the case.
I love it from a sitting back and looking at the amount of content that my team puts out. You know, I'm including Irina Slav on the podcast, Tammy Nemeth, David Blackman, Ray Trevino, Michael Tanner, and myself. And we and the doctor, we get this stuff out here. But you guys, I love your methodology and Mitchell, how you phrased digging up the bodies. You know, I'm sorry that you got some talent. You two have a good working relationship. Have you all known each other since kindergarten?
Well, actually, we've known each other since I became an intern at the Center of the American Experiment. So that was what, March 2018, I came in.
And
I
think
I
6 years.
Yeah. So you actually were hired right around that time too. And so I was an intern and Isaac was pretty much the only one that utilized me. And it just became a working pair, you know, since then. And yeah, we really have complemented each other. You know, like we said, I dig up the bodies. We're both writers, but Isaac puts that, you know, don't make me think flair onto it. And it worked well.
You know, and understanding where I'm at, you know, as far as really trying to focus on ending energy poverty through the delivering the lowest kilowatt per hour to everyone on the planet by delivering sustainable energy, fiscally responsible energy without printing money, and having the least amount of impact on the environment, everybody kind of shakes their head. Oh, yeah, that's exactly right. And then you start mentioning, oh, wait a minute, wind and solar are incapable of doing that. And they're a money grab. And, you know, you start and they're not recyclable and all this other kind of stuff. You guys nailed it with the grid on the green plating. And I was like, I got to get you guys on the podcast. I saw that and I was like, I want to make sure that you get your story out here because you articulated it better than I could have.
Well, that's great. Should we talk about that piece then?
Absolutely.
Okay, cool.
This goes hand in hand with your other one, yes, which is deindustrialization of Germany, which is happening intentionally. And that's a whole other geopolitical thing that I've been talking to folks all over the world about. And let's go ahead and kick off. What were you thinking?
Yeah. So I think the most important thing for a lot of your listeners to understand is that vertically integrated monopoly utility companies, which is the model for most of the country, right? There's a handful of states that have a more competitive, they've destructured or unstructured the generation of electricity, but most states that we've seen or worked in have still been pretty much vertically integrated. And those are not really private companies. They are government approved monopoly utilities. And that's what it is. Like, I think conservatives need to understand that the utility company is not a private company. It is this monopoly that's created by the government. And it has the exclusive right to sell electricity in its service territory. So there can be no competition. So all competition will be squelched. It would be unfair to allow the utility company to charge whatever they want for electricity because there's no competition, right? So the price of electricity in these areas is set by regulators, government regulators at the Public Service Commission, Public Utilities Commission, whatever it's called. And it uses a formula called the cost of service formula. And people's eyes always glaze over whenever you say formula, but stay with me, people. It's actually pretty simple. It says
for our podcast listeners, Isaac, I just want to say Mitch's eyes started glowing when you said formula and date. And I mean, he started almost purring. So anyway, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
He loves it. He went to, he's got his master's in finance. So he's like, yes, the formula. So he's just the mad scientist in his lab. And anyway, this formula says that a utility company can charge enough for its electricity to cover the cost of providing service to everybody, plus a 10% profit whenever they build something new. And that new expansion, that new construction is approved by the regulator, right? So this gives utility companies a powerful incentive to build as much new stuff as the regulator will let them get away with. And on the other end of this equation is depreciation. So every year, a utility pays off a power plant a little bit more. Think about like when you're paying off a mortgage, every month, every year, you're paying off less interest and more principal. So once this asset is completely depreciated, it is providing the lowest cost, most reliable electricity on the grid, but it is no longer creating a profit for the utility because its book value is technically zero, even though it's a great asset. It's the best asset for the ratepayer. So we have, go ahead, Stu.
Yeah, ratepayer, but you know, you sit back and kind of go, it's financial, and the ratepayer is always getting it in the drive-thru, as Joe Pesci said, you know, in you know, Lethal Weapon.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So what's happening now is utilities have a strong incentive to be as inefficient as possible when it comes to how they spend money, as long as a regulator says it's okay. And many times the regulator is perfectly happy to approve new wind, solar, battery storage, what have you, and to close down the coal plants. So wind and solar are the inefficiencies that utility companies are looking for. And the fact that wind and solar don't work very well is an incredible bonus, because every time you shut down a coal plant, you are able to replace it with probably an equivalent amount of wind. So let's just say 10 megawatts. This is what we said in our piece, right?
Right.
We said you shut down a 10 megawatt coal plant, you're able to build 10 megawatts of wind, 10 megawatts of solar, and then 10 megawatts of natural gas, because there will inevitably be a period where you need all 10 megawatts of natural gas in order to back up that wind and solar. So you've essentially tripled the size of the grid, tripled your cash outlay for new generation, and the utility is making tons of profits. And I don't know, Mitch, do you want to elaborate on the kinds of profits that we're talking about? Because it's billions of dollars.
Yeah, yeah, it's billions, and it's company after company that's doing it too. And they've grown at a wow. massive scale, to the point where Morningstar has suggested that, you know, the utility industry is now a growth industry when it was supposed to, you know, be kind of a slow and steady industry.
Oh yeah.
And it was Travis Miller in there that was in the Morningstar piece that was talking about, yeah, you know, this is the best growth environment that we've seen utilities have in a while. And it's because of electrification, EVs, and clean energy goals. And we didn't say it in the piece, but Travis Miller goes on to say that in the states where they're less likely to approve rate increases, this growth environment doesn't exist. And so growth environment exists where you can approve rate increases and do your clean energy goals, but not where they're not going to approve that stuff. So you kind of put two and two together. Wow. What's causing yeah. rate increases? It's these utility profits that are just skyrocketing. And we listed XL, DTE Energy, APS, and We Energies.
Yeah, Arizona Public Service. We Energies is in Wisconsin. DTE is in Detroit. Right. So,
Arizona. Now, are they the ones maintaining the nuclear facility yes. out there? Yeah, because I've been through that nuclear facility, and it's pretty darn cool. I mean, still, it's.
Oh yeah, we love nuclear, and.
Yeah.
One of the reasons we love it is because the plants last for 80 years, right? So when we're thinking about the perpetual cash machine that wind and solar are for these utilities, a wind turbine lasts maybe 20 years. A lot of them are being repowered after only 10 or 11. We write about that on our Substack too. It's in an article called The Death of a Wind Farm. So and solar panels only last for 25 years. So you could
let me throw this squirrel at you. Your points are dead on right. And I want to jump in here because I get excited and I'm a hyperactive rat child. Okay. I've found that the wind farms are fiscally unsustainable from day one without injections from tax incentives / same thing Warren Buffett said, don't invest in a wind farm unless it's got tax subsidies. Now, everybody said 20 years, 30 years, blah, 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 blah. Back that number back down to 8. 8 seems to be the mean time between failure and warranty repairs. 6 seems to be where it really starts coming in. And when the rates can't get approved, you guys nailed it. I didn't articulate it well so far. And that is in that 8-year mark, they start revamping it. Like Robert Bryce said, that they're coming back in and saying, hey, they're applying for funds from the Porculus bill, as Dan Bongino calls the Inflation Reduction Act, and then the infrastructure bill, which both have a bunch of crap in it. So then they come back and do that, even that on that 8-year mark and that 6-year mark. It is graft. It is terrible. It is stealing. It is, and nobody, I haven't been able to figure out the future cost of money formula. And Mitchell, you're going to love this one. When you sit back and I got my MBA billions of years ago, I couldn't remember a single formula possible. So what is the dollar amount that this bloated Porculus bill going back around to these utilities having on our national budget and the inflation to the consumers and the rate? So if we're at a ballpark 20, you can see where I'm going with this, right? So we're at a 20% inflation under Bidenomics, you know, Biden economics, when you're talking food and everything else, right? What is our national debt going to do to us that is directly impacted by the high cost of energy? And you look at California, I'm having a data dump right now, you know, guys. And so California is at 100% increase in electricity rates from 2005 to 2022, I believe is what the EPA just put out. And so either that or you guys did. I'm stealing the information from everywhere. So, and so you can see where I'm going with this. I want to know, we don't know how bad it is. I mean, is that a fair statement? Did I just go off the rails and totally miss the boat?
No, well, I mean,
think you're right. Yeah. It's going to be bad. We don't know how bad.
Travis Fisher from Cato says that we're going to be spending $3 trillion or up to $3 trillion on wind and solar subsidies through 2050. Because, you know, in the Inflation Reduction Act, they said that it was something along the lines of these subsidies will last until 2032 or until our targeted CO2 reduction goals are met, which effectively could make these subsidies permanent. Right. So that was one of the things. Well, right. Yes. So that's one of the things that he talks about a lot. This is essentially an uncapped spending bill. So hopefully we have a complete change of the guard when it comes to who's in office, after November. And because they passed this through reconciliation, you can repeal that pretty easily in theory. But we need, conservatives in the legislature, free marketers in the legislature, to have the fortitude. You can insert whatever body part you want in front of fortitude in order to repeal these repeal these subsidies. And many times it's been folks from the Great Plains, like Senator Grassley, who have championed the wind production tax credit. So, there ultimately needs to be a recognition in conservative circles for policymakers that the subsidies that we've been providing for wind and solar are actively undermining the reliability of the electric grid. And this isn't a cute little gimme or pet project for your state anymore. This is an existential threat to the country's competitiveness when it comes to manufacturing, mining, you name it.
Right.
Like, if we want to be a global superpower, we can't keep subsidizing energy sources that do not work well.
No, and you guys are just nailing it right down the park on that. And you know, it's kind of like I didn't learn enough about the grid until I read the book Shorting the Grid by Meredith Angwin. I love Meredith. She is a national treasure speaking about the grid and stability and everything else. And so, I, you know, the balancing authorities and exactly what you guys are preaching and talking about, you know, you have another great resource out there, the Meredith Angwin of the world. And have you guys seen the, you know, juicetheseries.com by Robert Bryce?
Yep.
He's pretty cool when he got that bad dog thrown out there, didn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. Robert's a bad man.
I love that bad man. You guys.
Oh, me too. I mean, bad man in the most flattering way possible.
Considering you got a way cool podcast called The Energy Bad Boys. My first thought was Bad Boys 2. You guys, you know, have got, I know you've probably seen that, right? Mm-hmm. Bad Boys 2 with, I think it's Martin and, what's his Will name? Smith. Yeah. Thank you.
Martin Lawrence. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. All right. Now, when you guys were dating, did your father, the father of the girl that you guys were ever dating, show up like Will Smith's uncle when he pretended to, you know, shoot the kid and get out of the way, kid? Oh, you know, no,
I promised myself I would be that father when I.
I think Will Smith, that was one of Will Smith's greatest movies, yeah, as far as I was concerned. I mean, you know, I don't care if he's socially adept anymore. I don't watch any Hollywood. What's next for your stories? What do you see coming around the corner for you guys right now?
Yeah. Well, this week we're working on another piece that is our solution to utility green plating. We've been working on this legislation called the Only Pay for What You Get Act for a few years. It's been our pet idea. And ultimately, we want ratepayers to be protected from paying for the full cost of an asset, regardless of whether that asset shows up when you need the power most. So,
how can I help?
Well, I mean, we're talking about it right now and the listeners are getting, well, I guess the piece will be out by the time the podcast is released. So, check out, How to Stop Utility Green Plating, the Only Pay for What You Get Act on the Energy Bad Boys Substack. It will be published, probably, March 16th is probably the day you can look for on that.
But Mr. Producer, I got to be an arrogant bonehead. Let's get this out before that. I'm just kidding. this is fantastic.
Yeah. So, you know, we have Xcel Energy in Minnesota and we have friends in Colorado that also deal with Xcel, and they are the worst when it comes to green plating their grids. Run TV commercials talking about how electricity will be affordable moving forward, low cost, but they always decline to define what that means. So they use these ambiguous weasel words and they basically lie to people, and they have these stupid commercials that drive me crazy. And every time I see one, I'm like, I'm going to get them. Mitch and I were thinking, what legislation could we propose that would anger Xcel the most? So we came up with Only Pay for What You Get. So grid planners, regardless of whether that is a utility commission or a regional transmission organization, right, RTO, they basically give different capacity value or reliability values to assets based on their performance during times of peak electricity demand, right? So this is called a capacity accreditation or capacity value. You can use all of these terms basically interchangeably. Thermal resources, coal, natural gas, and nuclear get high values. It's generally anywhere between 85 and 95% capacity value. Nuclear is at the high end. Gas is usually at the lower end because there's been more outages during, you know, like Winter Storm Elliott or Uri. But wind and solar always get pretty low values. So I've just been looking at this for this piece right now. And you have a lot of times solar will get a fairly high capacity value in the summertime because the hours when solar is producing a lot coincide with the hours of the highest electricity demand in the summertime. But in the wintertime, It gets like a 6% capacity value because the days are short. Here in Minnesota, the panels are frequently covered in snow. And even in the South, right? So let's look at North Carolina, which, you know, maybe that's the Mid-Atlantic, but we're from Wisconsin and Minnesota. So anything below Mason-Dixon is the South to us. And in North Carolina during Winter Storm Elliott, electricity demand peaked at night when it was cold and solar was producing 0 megawatts, right? So if we are forced to electrify home heating or transportation, we are going to switch from summer peaking systems to winter peaking systems. So we need to think about that moving forward. So under our legislation, we would probably average it out. So if a utility company wants to build a solar panel, that's okay. But you can only recover, let's say, 22% or 25% of that cost from ratepayers. And the remaining 75% of that capacity value or that asset would have to be paid by some other means, probably shareholders, right? So this is our way of introducing some market signals into a utility planning process that basically doesn't have any, right? So same for wind. Wind in MISO in the summertime gets an 18% capacity accreditation. So you get to recover 18% of your costs from ratepayers. And if you want to build it and put stupid TV commercials on the television, you can, but your shareholders are going to be on the hook for this asset.
I love everything that you just said. Here's where we're in for a really big bet. Do you have a sponsor politically that likes your idea yet?
Well, that's you eat an elephant one step at a time, Stu. I think that we can probably find some.
Okay, let's do this one step at a time. Let's get it published. Let's get it out there. I want to help get a sponsor and let's talk this bad dog up.
Yep.
You know, we seem to be using bad boys, bad dog, bad everything, bad Robert's a bad dude. let's get us a bad dog sponsor.
That's right.
For this and really try to carry this forward because I quite honestly don't believe this is so cool. And I don't believe that the current Department of Energy folks would actually let the lobbyists even get a hold of this. I don't think this would get past the lobbyists, to be honest with you.
Oh, no, absolutely not. So and the thing is, we want this to get past.
We got to try. Levels.
We do. Absolutely. 100%. So we think that this is most applicable at a state level for legislation. So any state lawmakers who are listening and you say, this is a great idea. We have draft legislation that we can, send to you if you want to introduce it, talk to your colleagues That's about huge. It. So we already have that. It's generally the problem here is that the utility companies in many states are among the top lobbyists in the entire ecosystem there. In Minnesota, it's frequently Xcel Energy, Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, and then, a few others, right? So you have one company that lobbies more than the entity that's responsible for lobbying for all of the businesses in the state. So they have extreme political power. And in blue states, the utilities basically are buddy-buddy with the lawmakers there because like, oh no, don't force us to spend a whole bunch of money and increase our corporate profits. That would be terrible, right? So they are basically, they say they're neutral on a lot of these mandates for more wind and solar, but on the back end, they're counting their money. And then they say things in committee like, we're neutral, but we are excited about this opportunity to decarbonize our grid. And so they go ahead.
I'm sorry. I get excited. And do you see that ERCOT may have a little bit of a different opinion on this?
So ERCOT, we haven't looked at that. So I know the Public Utilities of Texas or Commission of Texas is getting involved in this issue. Our friend Brent Bennett down at Texas Public Policy Foundation keeps a closer eye on this stuff than we do. But we're always happy to help Brent out if he ever needs it. And he's been incredibly generous with his time with with us too, whenever we write about Texas.
Maybe we do a little seminar with him and a webinar, live webinar, get this thing rolling and try to help him out. What do you think?
Yeah. So in Texas, it's going to be tough because in ERCOT, there is basically an unlimited ability for new entrants to come into the market and they don't need any permission. So in the vertically or integrated states, if a utility company wants to build something new, they need to go get permission from the regulator. And there is no barrier to entry in ERCOT in order to do that. If you wanted to talk about the panhandle, where Xcel Energy also operates and may or may not have been responsible for a large smokehouse fire. We'll see. They deny any negligence.
There are other conspiracy theories that we won't go into on this one, but
yeah. Yeah. And we don't need to,
holy smokes.
Yeah. So we think that this is best at a state level. And, I think it'll go a long way towards encouraging people to build things that are reliable, durable assets. And that's what we need. We need as much reliable, affordable, and long-lasting power plants on the grid as possible. That's why Mitch and I say, look, these coal plants that we're shutting down have decades of useful life on them, and we need more power. I mean, if we're going to be reshoring manufacturing, if we're going to have data centers and all that stuff, you can't close these down and keep the lights on. Yeah.
And we sit back and Monday on the Energy Realities, the team from Irina Slav, Tammy Nemeth, and David Blackman and I are going to be talking about the resurgence of natural gas around the world, just the sheer number of natural gas, and the EIA coming back out and saying the only reason that we dropped our gas outputs is the retiring of the coal and the increased of the natural gas plants, but yet we can't get a damn pipeline permitted within 8 hours of the, you know, the Marcellus up there, and they're importing LNG from Russia, you know, and a few other nefarious places into Boston. You can't buy this kind of entertainment as an energy writer right now.
Yeah, and Boston deserves it. I mean...
I knew I liked you guys.
Yeah.
Well, fantastic. I'll tell you, you know, we've got so much to talk about again, and I can't wait to have a longer relationship with you guys and trying to help share your word out there and get your story out there, because you guys are knocking it out of the park. So, Mitchell, what's coming around the corner for you personally?
Personally, well, I'm really excited about the Substack, and I just really like growing that. I like digging into everything. You know, that's really been on my mind first and foremost, besides my job at the center. So that's coming around. We have another great piece coming around about the intermittency, the levelized cost of intermittency. So that's going to be a fun one too.
Nice.
We won't
miss
that one. So just keep an eye out for it. But we have some fun stuff coming up.
Cool. How about you, Isaac? What's coming around the corner for you personally?
Yeah. Well, I'm going to go professional first and then personal. We're helping the state of North Dakota model the impact of different EPA regulations on reliability and affordability. And, you know, that is going to be, it's the North Dakota Transmission Authority has been a great partner for us. Mitch and I joke we're the unofficial energy modelers of the state at this point.
Right.
And they're going to use the analysis that we're doing, and they're probably going to be using it to sue for a stay on the mercury and air toxic standards. And we're talking about potentially doing this for the new CO2 regulations as well. We did it on the original version of the Clean Power Plan 2.0. And nice. I think we're going to do it for this next one. So that's going to be great. I mean, I think that is it's a really exciting opportunity for us at American Experiment to be involved in this high stakes litigation. And yeah, we're the expert witnesses. So that's really cool. Yeah. And then personally, it's, you know, summertime in Minnesota. It's the best time to be here.
Do you do any fishing for walleye up there? Or?
No, I grew up on a farm, so I'm more of a farmer than a fisher.
It's kind of like every time I go by a cow truck hauling them, I smell money. And so once you're on a farm, you have a whole different smell
I smell work, but you can smell money if you want to.
So with that, how do people find you guys?
Yeah, you can check us out at americanexperiment.org. And I'm on Twitter. I refuse to call it X. So here's the thing. I grew up on the same house my grandpa was born in 1930 on a small dairy farm, right? And like all of the different fields that we farm have names associated with them. Like, hey, can you run a sandwich down to Dad's? He's on Mortensen's, right? Yeah. And Mortensen's have not owned that field in my lifetime, but we still call it Mortensen's, right? So if the field changes hands, we don't change the name of the field. And that's how I feel about Twitter. You can find me at The Fracking Guy on Twitter. And Mitch, you're on Twitter as well. What's your handle?
Yep, I'm at Mitch Rowling, but I'm also active on LinkedIn. Same thing. Yep. So.
Yep. And of course, Energy Bad Boys on Substack.
I'll tell you, we will have all of those in the show notes. And I can't wait to visit with you guys again and look forward to it. So thank you so much for making the time today.
Yeah, this is super fun. Have us on anytime.
Yeah. I hope this was the worst podcast you were ever on. All right. Thanks, guys.